wanted. It was all hung. Okay, so.
Good morning! I am not Emmanuel Goldstein, although I have played him on television. Emmanuel is asleep right now. The pro that he is, he was up all night putting the final touches on Freedom Downtime, which will, of course, be here tonight at 7 o'clock. I'm so forward to that movie. So cool. He spent the last 2 years of his life roaming around the country, the world, the universe, making interviews and checking out situations that you guys will all be informed about later tonight. My name is Mojo. If you see me have any questions, you can ask me. I'm not going to run this thing this weekend. I guess the only real request I have is please respect the hotel. That especially means the payphones, okay? Let's leave the little payphones all to themselves. And you know what? It's hard enough to get a hotel in the middle of New York City for you guys to run this thing. As long as the hotel staff's happy, doesn't see any freaky going on, no pun intended. And I'm sure they'll be happy to invite us back for future times. So, I guess that's about it. How many of you are the first time in New York City? Quite a few. All right, well, do yourselves a favor. Don't spend the whole weekend in the hotel, okay? Yeah. See a few of the sites. This is New York City. You can just wander a few blocks in the hotel, and you'll find all kinds of cool things. So those are a lot of good electronic stores, but do yourself a favor. Don't pay any more than half of what they tell you it costs. That's your best rule here in New York. All right, we're going to get things started with Scott Blake from Razer. He's going to talk to you all about the pros and cons of working for the man. So have a nice warm welcome to Scott. I'll see you later.
Hi, is the sound level good? Everybody can hear me in the back? Yeah? Okay. Good. Yeah, we're going to try to avoid feedback by staying away from the speakers. So bear with me slightly here because the laptop is not happy with the projector and having both on at the same time. So I can't see what you can see, so I have to turn around from time to time. So, So this is just a quick outline of what we're going to talk about, and I like to keep these things very informal. So if you have any questions, put up your hand, and I'll be happy to interrupt them. That's cool. There will be questions and answers at the end as well. Presuming you have enough time. And what time do I have to? Where's Linda? Did we go? What time do I have to finish? I have to finish at 11 or a little before.
11.
Okay. Okay, that's a bad spot. Okay. So the outline is, who am I, who is the man, for those of you who don't know, which probably is you. The pros of selling out, the cons of selling out, and living with the man, not in your own apartment or house or whatever per se, but that's sort of an ongoing relationship that you may wish to pursue, and then we'll wrap it up. So this is me, Scott Blake, as you saw, and as I was so graciously introduced. I'm the manager of the Razer team, which is a security research team for Bindu Corporation, which is based in Houston. And it's a team of folks, probably not all that unlike yourselves, who write stuff for a living, find new and interesting ways to subvert and create security. I'm also a sociologist, using that term somewhat loosely. I did quite a bit of graduate work in that field and didn't like that. Don't have a PhD, but I have a master's degree, so it's sort of as well. And I'm an experienced security consultant in the field for quite a few years now, done IT management, and I'm an employer of hackers on the Razer team. So that's my sort of qualifications, if you will. So who is the man? Those of you who have a couple of gray hairs probably already know. Who the man is, some of you who don't have any gray hairs may not, but it's a term for the establishment, basically. It's, corporate America, the government. Universities are an interesting question, which is why I have the question mark on there. Some people don't consider universities to be part of the establishment, although that's a fairly debatable point. When you start thinking about where a lot of the money comes from, who they're sort of beholden to. If you spend any time in academia, doing graduate work, for example, you start to get a sense that it really is part of the establishment. So they may try to tell you otherwise, but don't believe them. He's still working for the man. So it's pretty much everybody. We could make a couple of exceptions if you happen to be lucky enough to be a full-time employee of, say, 2600, possibly something like the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, one of those places that's really trying to do good work and doesn't have the profit motive involved. You might be able to make a case for it, but even in those cases, you have to play the game to a certain extent. So basically, working for the man means collecting a paycheck regardless of who you're getting it from. So which man do you want to own your soul? Okay. Because that's essentially what you're doing. When you go to work for corporate America, you are selling your soul for some limited period of time, preferably for some large amount of remuneration, but not always, depending on the circumstances. So you want to think about what kind of work that you want to be doing. I just put up a couple of examples here. There are plenty more. These are the kinds of things that you're most likely to be attracted to. Consulting is big right now. There are two startups that probably a lot of you have heard of. AtState, which is worth a lot. There's some representatives around here. I don't know if there's anybody in the audience. Probably still around here. But that's selling out. That's working for the man. And consulting is a growing area. There is a Forrester research report a couple of years ago that said it's going to be the next big thing. So everybody wants to get into that now. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, the market analyst. If you haven't been working for a little while, you may not be aware of market analysts. It's a really interesting thing. Forrester, IDG, Gartner Group, there's a whole bunch of them, and they're very highly respected. They get quoted all the time in all the press, and they say, you know, what's going to happen next. And everybody believes them. That's the fun part, really, about it, is that all they have to do is say something, and everybody goes, that must be it. And so, as I said, a couple of years ago, they got together and said that security consulting is going to be a big market in the next few years. And so now everybody wants to jump into that. The other one that's sucking up a lot of folks not unlike yourself is a company called Gardens, which is another security consulting company. Probably there are a few employees in the audience that I recognize at the moment. But it's sort of an interesting thing, too, because AtState was really playing up the hacker angle, that having merged with the law firm and wanting to be able to exploit some of that brand, whereas Gardner is really downplaying that, although I think you find if you start talking to some of the people who work in those places that they're the same people. They're all friends with each other, and in fact, one of the managing directors of Gardens was until extremely recently engaged to somebody who happened to work at State. So it's, you know, it's the same thing, even though it doesn't always appear that way on the surface. It's all the man. Right? Research is another area that's a possibility for employment. And I'll talk more about what sort of the pros and cons of each of these areas as we go along. My group, for example, is a research organization. If you're interested in research, talk to me afterwards. But there are other places as well. There are a couple of private organizations. AtState, the Law Labs, does do tour research as well. There's also NAI Associates has a research lab that they acquired through CIS. But there isn't a lot of that in private industry. Mostly you're going to be ending up more in the academic area if that's what you're going to be interested in doing. The pure play kind of not feeding products, not doing consulting, but just research, basic research in the field. IT staff is a big one. Probably there are more than a few people in the audience here who are essentially IT staff, either with explicit security responsibilities, like you're the security guy on the IT staff, or much more likely, it's just one more of the job responsibility that you may have. You're ostensibly a system administrator, a network engineer, you name it. There are a lot of different job titles that go along in that field. But everybody always says, and it needs to be secure as well. Right? So we want to build this great website. We want to do e-commerce. We want to have all this stuff. We want to get all this data moving back and forth. And it has to be secure. It's always just tacked on to the end. It has to be secure. And then so everybody sort of runs around and pulls their hair out for a little while trying to figure out exactly how they're going to do that in a lot of cases. And that's a different topic. That maybe next year. development is one area that there aren't a lot of folks who would wear the hacker moniker with pride involved in, but there are certainly a few. You're mostly talking about the security companies at this point, but also consulting places where you're going to be doing a lot of sort of project-based application development. And there may actually be, in some cases, an actual security thing to it, as opposed to being, oh, and it has to be secure as well. And that's going to be increasingly the case with e-commerce, and especially with business-to-business or B2B stuff, as people are much more sensitive about that when there's real money involved, as opposed to just collecting people's credit cards. Interesting side note. Does anyone know, off the top of their head, what your liability is for fraudulent use of your credit card?
$50.
Exactly right. Okay. So I don't know about you, but I'm perfectly happy to use my credit card on the internet, and I don't really care if anybody picks it up. Right? Why do I care if my maximum liability is 50%? And in practice, what that means is it's only 50% if the credit card company can't actually show that it was fraudulent. So if I actually went out and bought something that was not necessarily tangible, and wrote a letter to my credit card company saying, hey, I didn't buy this side, that wasn't me. It was probably using credit card. They will, chances are, charge me $50 for it, which is, in turn, probably using credit card. But that's neither here nor there, because the credit card companies don't really care, because they can write it off. As long as it's kept to a reasonable level and isn't having a really major detrimental effect on the bottom line, it's just a tax write-off for the credit card companies, too. This is why, for those of you who didn't already know this, credit card security is so incredibly bad in all ways. Okay? I mean, forget about the internet. You know, go to a restaurant and charge your dinner, and you know, the receipt goes out to who knows where, right? So dumpster diving, we're all familiar with it, sort of passé now, I guess, to do that kind of thing, but it's still extremely effective. You know, nobody cares. Tax write-off for the company, very limited liability for the consumer, so anyway, I'm side note there. But there are other possibilities also for different faces of the man that you may choose to work for that will have different specifics to them, but we're not going to cover those too much today. So the pros of selling out. You decided what you want to do, you want to go do research, you want to do some consulting, you want to go work in an IT staff someplace. They're going to pay you money. That's the whole point of the thing in the first place, right? As well as shipping, because you're not basically going to get a heck of a lot else. There are going to be a few other pros that we're going to hit on, but compared to the money, and in some cases the stock options if you happen to get lucky, although I don't know if you all know, 9 out of 10 startups fail. It has nothing to do with the internet, but that is the statistic. So you have roughly a 1 in 10 chance of making any money off your stock options, much less making a killing off of them. I did an internet security startup a couple of years ago and was extremely lucky to basically get a car out of the deal. Because basically the new car was about the payoff I got. I was hoping for like a house and a boat, but the car, you know, not that. Good consolation prize. So stock options are definitely something that you need to consider. And the terms of the agreements as well, we'll come to that in a little bit. Benefits like health insurance, that's always convenient. As some of you grow up a little bit and start to maybe get married, have kids, perish the thought, I know, but health insurance will become extremely important later on in life, I can assure you that. Okay. Business cards, they're kind of cool. They're, especially if you have a really liberal company, you can get cool job titles on them or additional logos and peace of mind. We have the BindView logo at the top, which you can't see, but there's also the Razor logo underneath, right? So we have them both, and we're special. Nobody else has the subdivision logo in their business cards, right? So it's a mark of pride. And even better, you can sometimes get a cool job title on the business cards, which can be a real mark of pride when you're going to do something like HBK and hand them out as you're networking and trying to meet other people. You can put cool things on there, like super genius. I have a friend who had that on there. Another one that's a little bit more subtle, and we'll see who laughs on this one, Occam Theorist. Okay, yep, got a couple of those, a couple of people get it. Okay. Occam's Razor, right? The Razor King. Okay, good. All right, great. So business cards, you laugh, but it's an important benefit. Perquisites are less common in this country. I think there are a few people from other places around. Perquisites can be things like use of the company VIP box when you go to see the game, which you can get them certain circumstances. Other countries, it's actually quite common to get a car for especially senior level technical staff and managers.
Yeah. So I see what they gave me was a Diners Club card with no limit.
Hey, there you go. Diners Club card with no limit. Good benefit there.
Everybody's dinner tonight.
Everybody. And you know, a lot of places you get like servers. Actually, starting recently for like top level managers in India. It's a common part of the compensation package to get like a maid in the house and the groundskeeper and stuff like that. That's cool. I don't play with it, but not likely in this country. Travel and excitement, very important. Travel to things like this convention or other conventions of its kind. It's all professional development. Remember that phrase, professional development. It's an important thing to ask about if you're considering selling your soul. War pros could be very interesting work. Happens. The work that my group does is extremely interesting. I have a lot of really good stuff that I do in consulting. IT stuff tends to be not so interesting, but sometimes it can be, depending on the environment that you're in and a number of other factors. We'll talk about this briefly. Root passwords on toolboxes. I don't even go into that one. But toys, like VFRs. Does anyone know what VFR is? That's a big router. Yeah, it's silent. I stole that joke, by the way, from Vince Cerf. He gave a talk at RSA this past year on the future of the internet. Vince Cerf, for those of you who don't know, one of the guys who invented IP, now the vice president of something rather at NCI WorldCom, and all around cool guy. It's a good joke to steal. It could be fun. Not likely, but it's possible. Fun does happen, especially with your colleagues. If there's a couple of people who are of like mind, you can have these sorts of things. I know a number of places that have after-hours Quake or Doom or whatever on their networks. Right? So Friday night, 5:30, everybody fires up Doom or Quake or whatever the latest thing is, Descent or you know what have you. And they all play on these, you know, gigabit networks. They're not doing anything else, so why not just play a game on them? And that can be very cool. Some area-specific pros. Research, very low pressure. Your goals are going to be things like, okay, let's crank out a paper this year. We can do that. You know, maybe high-pressure environment might be like, 2 papers this year. Go off and do something cool. Make us all proud. That's the kind of environment that a lot of them have. Often there's a very high degree of freedom. Places that fund research are generally doing it for the basic research aspect that will lead to something. And Bell Labs and Bell Corps used to do this kind of stuff. You got to be a fellow at one of these places, and they give you a big budget and say, have fun. Let us know what you come out with. And the idea here is that they're betting that something is going to come out of this that's going to have a big commercial application. And it happens. It happens quite frequently. That's where a lot of innovations come from. One note on research, however, is that not all research is the basic research that you're going to find in academia. Some places this is essentially consulting. Okay. And where you're doing research, but for a client, often the government in most cases, and that's a very different story. That's consulting, okay. Without the travel usually, which is one you'll note here is one of the pros. Change of scenery, yeah, it's one of the pros, and that one goes away if you're doing consulting research. But you can do some very interesting stuff. So, moving here. Operations in IT, lots of data and lots of toys. Toys, we sort of mentioned things like big routers. And data in the form of like firewall logs, IDS logs. What's going on? If you're responsible for operational security or are part of a team that's responsible for operational security, you get to like investigate and do the forensic stuff and say, hey, somebody broke in, or figure out whether or not somebody broke in and try to track them down and do all that kind of stuff, which is entertaining from an intellectual challenge point of view. Can be very cool. That's what I mean by lots of data. There are things happening, and you're sort of involved in that. It's especially true at larger companies. The bigger the company, the more data you're going to get. At small companies, it tends to not be nearly as much fun in that respect, anyway. Consulting, the change of scenery, if you're into that. Lots of travel in a lot of cases. Not necessarily if you're doing more researching kind of things, but can be very high travel, which is also one of the cons I should probably mention. Travel sounds really cool when you first start thinking about, wow, we're going to go to San Francisco, we're going to go to Chicago, we're going to go to London and Paris and Tokyo and Singapore, and it's going to be great. Until you wake up one day and realize you haven't been home in 2 months, and your cat doesn't recognize you when you walk in the door, and your dog starts barking at you, and as you begin to get older, that will be prevalent in some cases. That will tend to become more important as things like your wife has changed the locks on the door, for example, but that sort of thing can certainly happen. Again, lots of data because you're changing environments. A lot of times, one of the big things in consulting now is we all know, does anyone not know who Bruce Schneier is? Raise your hand. One. A couple, a few. Okay. Bruce Schneier is probably the most famous photographer in the world, probably. Author of Applied Photography, the seminal work in the field, network security, all around, crazy guy, okay? And a reasonably nice person, too. And is the president and CTO and founder of Counterpane Systems, which is going to be the next ADT, going to be the ADT of the internet. And so what they're doing is they're basically setting up sensors out in all their customers' networks and gathering up all of the data and doing all sorts of processing stuff on it. Talk about lots of data. That's cool. Managed security services are another area that one of the analysts said is going to be big. So lots of people are getting into that field. There are a number of places that do it already, like BBN, GTEI, Genuity now, and IBM have managed security services, a place outfit to California called Pilot Network Services. There are a number of them that are popping up. Some of the boutique consulting companies are starting to do these things too. That's small, for those of you who know it. And big bucks, if you do it right anyway. Consultants can usually you'll start off relatively low, but it wouldn't be unusual for a security consultant with 2 years of experience to be well into six figures as a salary position. If you're good enough to be going independent, you're talking big dollars, hundreds of dollars an hour at least in a lot of cases. If you want to make a lot of money, that's the only thing you're interested in, you don't care about anything else, all you want is money, do consulting. Definitely where the money is. And development, you get code, which you typically don't get in a lot of the other places except research. One thing I should mention about research, too, speaking of code, is one of, you might consider also the federally funded research centers, the FFRCs. MITRE is one, and RAND is another one. Speaking of MITRE, sidetracked here, but MITRE, those of you who don't know, is a private company, it's not for profit. It's a federally funded research center. They do a lot of work with DOD, NSA, lots of stuff. You have to have security clearance and all that cool stuff. And does anyone know what MITRE stands for? Because I heard this at the National Information Systems Security Conference. MITRE stands for Mindless Idiots Trying to Run Everything. Okay. So, you know what crows are, which is basically money. But there are some other things as well. And so, what are the cons? Well, for starters, all of a sudden, you have something to lose. So this is all fun and games, breaking into everybody's stuff. When you're 16 and you're a juvenile, and it's fine, but at some point, they'll actually put you in prison for an appreciable amount of time if you're doing bad things. If you actually have to be employed, then you're going to get fired. And the time is passing somewhat when a cool hack would get you a job offer. It's still true to a certain extent, but it is increasingly becoming less common to do that because, primarily, the pool is growing. There are a lot of people sitting in this audience here, most of them could probably do your job, or at least make a reasonable case that they could do your job, which is all that really counts. Whether or not you can actually do it is irrelevant. What's important is that you can convince them to hire you to do your job. Important thing to keep in mind as we go further. So they will not hesitate to fire you. And you probably will have a very difficult time getting a job again with a felony conviction on your record. So bad. Suddenly, something else needs to lose. And the man is afraid of you, which may not seem like a con at first, especially if you're still on the outside. But it becomes increasingly an impediment to your career development, shall we say. You don't really want to be the guy that they're afraid to fire, or the woman that they're afraid to fire, or the person, if you're not either of those two things, that they're afraid to fire. Because if that's the case, then they're not really going to want to hire you either, and so changing jobs may become difficult should you choose to not be employed anymore. We're going to come to that later. But it's also going to be difficult to get increasing responsibility. Career development, typically you're not going for just one job and that's going to be it. Career development, you're going to change jobs, you're going to change companies, you're going to move up the management chain perhaps, and it's not an advantage that people would be afraid to do if that's what you're interested in. I'm actually going to come back to that if I have any time, but I want to make sure I get through the key points here because we're a little tight. You have to work. kind of a bummer in that, especially the more money you make, the more they expect you to work. Go figure. But it's there. A lot of times you can sort of have fun and play when you feel like it. When you have a job, they actually expect you to show up on a regular basis, typically, or produce things on a regular basis, at least. You have to work. Now, a lot of you, I can see in your eyes, are thinking, well, I just do this stuff all the time anyway. It's great fun. I love it. It's just going to be great. We're doing security all the time. So, why not just get paid for it, and I do the same thing I'm doing all along, and that's fine, except that the next point is that the man has certain things that they want you to do, and they have a certain way that they want you to do those things in a lot of cases. And that can put a limitation on your fun. Right? But I think it's very fun to go look at new and interesting ways to hack together a Linux kernel to do whatever, right? But if your job is to be working on this website, that's not going to be very useful, and the man is going to get pissed. Okay? And that can be very inconvenient, as what we refer to as a CLM, which is a career-limiting move. Okay, I did not follow up on that. You have to be nice. I'll come back to that one again. But a lot of us sort of pride ourselves on being neat and egotistical and generally not all that much fun to get along with unless you happen to be also in our elite group. But there are going to be a lot of people that you have to be nice to who are not. Okay? People like the office manager who stocks the Jolt Cola in the fridge for you. I should mention that as one of the benefits. There's a lot of places you get like free soda and stuff, snacks. That's a person that you want to be nice to, especially if you have special requests. If you're a Jolt fan and you don't typically stock Jolt, you want to be friends with the office manager. And it's a good example. And the office manager is typically, not always, don't anyone get offended, but is often adult. Okay? And is very hard to be nice to, especially when they ask you stupid questions over and over again about how to fix their Windows 95 box. Salespeople are the same way. Okay? Salespeople are the ones who are bringing in all the money that's going through the company, which is in turn getting paid to you. Right? So sales is good. Right? You like sales. Salespeople, on the other hand, are often even duller than office managers when it comes to technology. And often you will find the more complex the technology they are selling, the less they know about it. It's like buying a car. It's a good analogy. Right? You go to a salesman, at a car dealership. Some of you are going to recognize it. No idea what I'm talking about. But if you go to a salesman at a car dealership and you say, what size plugs does the thing take so I can stock up on my replacement parts, they're going to have no idea what you're talking about. Okay? They know how much it costs. They know what the options are. They know what colors are available. If you're lucky, they'll know whether or not it comes with cloth or leather seats. Or whether or not you can get a sunroof put in, but they're going to have no clue when it comes to any technical specification about the vehicle whatsoever, okay? Including something that you might think would be a selling point, like, say, fuel economy. They may know that just because they've walked by the car a lot of times and it's in big numbers on the sticker. But that's the only reason that they're going to know. It just happened to sort of osmosis into their brain, osmosize, whatever. So being nice to people who are and I hesitate to say stupid, but technologically challenged, will prove difficult and is an important part of working for the man. No presentation would be complete without alphabet soup. So here are our three-letter acronyms, IPA, NDA, and NCA. That's Intellectual Property Agreement, Non-Disclosure Agreement, and Non-Compete Agreement. Okay? All of which you will have to sign in order to get a job with almost anyone. In some form or another, they may be combined, there may be omnibus employment agreements, which will include all of these things. Pieces of them may be embedded in a stock option agreement, which you'll also have to sign. But there are a couple of things that go on here. First of all, the IPA, the Intellectual Property Agreement, says that everything that you do for the company is a work for hire. Okay? What is work for hire? Work for hire is something that you do that the company owns. Okay? There's been interesting side note again here, just as an example. There's been a lot of pressure from the recording industry of America to get music songs defined as works for hire. Why? Because then, if an artist who's under contract with a record company writes a song, creates a song, the record company owns it. And the artist has zero rights to anything about that goes on with that song, ever. Okay? Are you sure? Somebody says it's already passed, but I'm not sure. And I'm not sure that it will pass muster in the courts either. Because there's a long story there. I don't want to go into that side note. However, code is absolutely a work for hire. Any code you write while in the employ of a company will be considered a work for hire and you have zero rights to it. Okay? Your compensation is the compensation for the work that you are doing, and that's it. End of story. You can't put it up on your website and give it away for free. You cannot develop it later. You cannot distribute it to anybody outside the company who is not equally constrained by these contracts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? Now, some companies will have intellectual property agreements which are considered to be extremely liberal in that if you do work that is not done on company systems, company time, and is not derivative of the work that you are doing for a living, you might be allowed to keep. Maybe. Depending on how the IPA is structured and how good your lawyer is. Most companies, however, define that basically anything you do which is even remotely related to the work that you're doing belongs to them regardless of when you do it. If you go in on a two-week vacation and spend 5 days of your two-week vacation writing a piece of code to do whatever, if you are a developer, chances are that piece of code belongs to somebody that you're employed with. It may be the case, even in some cases, if you were to write, say, a novel that's about hackers, right? And you're employed as a security professional, okay. The intellectual property agreements could be interpreted by a court, and there would be a lawsuit, to say that the company owns that too. Okay. It's directly derivative of the work that you're doing, the case can be made. Okay. So intellectual property agreements are, I like to call them fascist, and they're present, yes?
On that note, they're speaking of there, a good point of view is, if you're going to do anything, write a book, do any code, even if you're not a developer,
you've come to my next point. Thank you very much. The point was made that if you're going to do something that is outside of your job responsibilities, like write a novel that's about hackers or something, talk to the company ahead of time. Most of these things will have a provision in them that written permission can be given for certain things to be done that are outside of the purview. And I'm running short on time. I'm sorry, I know I said interrupt me with questions. Hold your questions to the end, though, because I got to get through the rest of the stuff before I run out. Sorry. intellectual property agreements. Look, read your intellectual property agreement before you sign it. Good idea. And if you have a lawyer, run it by your lawyer first, too, especially if you're doing something that's a creative work, like writing code or creating things in general. Non-disclosure agreements are pretty straightforward. It's that you can't tell anybody about anything that you do. There are caveats to that, obviously. Some things are considered confidential, some things are not considered confidential. When in doubt, ask your supervisor, because it may or may not be clear immediately what's going on. But as a rule of thumb, before you disclose anything to anybody, you should be sure that you are allowed to do that, as a rule of thumb. Non-computer grants are great fun, they're really interesting. Unfortunately, there isn't much case law on these yet, so we don't really know how it's going to play out. But the non-computer agreement that you will be asked to sign, or have signed in many cases, I'm sure, says something like, you cannot work in the field that you are currently employed in for anyone who is a competitor, usually very, very broadly defined, without waiting 1 year, often 1 year. So just think about this for a second. Say that you are writing code security software, just as an example, and you're working for one company, say it's a firewall, you're working on firewall software, right? And you want to go work for this other company that does intrusion detection systems, right? Very different kinds of technologies, very different kinds of things that you're going to be doing. Nevertheless, chances are that your non-compete agreement would apply, that you would, in fact, be contractually barred from doing that. Now, in point of fact, everybody ignores non-compete agreements. Right? Everybody ignores non-compete agreements. They can, however, be used in certain cases for senior people primarily to block them or to make noise for the company, but it may prove to be a limiting factor in getting the offer in the first place. Right? So non-compete agreements are nasty. And often may require you to make more dramatic changes than you would otherwise want to make. And you absolutely cannot go directly from one company that directly competes to another company that directly competes. So if you work for Checkpoint working on Firewall 1, you cannot go to Network Associates and work on Gauntlet, right? Or Accent and work on Grapher, or whatever it is. And commercial firewalls, not going to happen. Right? And you will almost certainly get sued, especially if you have any knowledge of how the thing works. And the company that you're working for will probably get sued, which will probably preclude them from offering you a job in the first place. Right? So, read the contracts. Maybe hard to respect, especially for the younger folks in the audience here. You may find that even though you have the technical ability of the rest of the development staff combined, or the rest of the IT staff combined, who undoubtedly have more years of experience in the industry than you are years old, okay, possibly each, okay, they don't care. You are the kid. Okay? And that will hold true probably sometime into your mid to late 20s, okay, for those of you who aren't there yet. I can speak from experience. I'm 28 years old, and I'm still referred to as the kid in a lot of circumstances, mostly by guilt by association in my case. But that's a hurdle that may be difficult to get over depending on the environment. But most environments, corporate America and government, that's going to be a major hurdle for you to deal with, and is a major drawback. Big Brother. Probably you don't know this, or maybe you do. Data that's on a corporate system, a system that the owner of a box owns the data on the box, okay, by default in case law. Right? So that includes things like your emails that are sitting on the server. Right? The company has every right in the world to investigate that stuff and every right in the world to observe every keystroke on your company-owned system at all times. That's been supported quite strongly in the courts. There is a gray area for machines that are provided by the company for home use. There's a case pending now with some Northwest flight attendants that were fired for, make sure I get stories right here, they were fired for conspiring to have a sick out, which itself may or may not have been illegal, and is another separate issue, but we're sending back and forth emails that were using the systems that the company had provided to them for home use. And the company found out about it by getting the data off of those systems and observing the activity that was taking place in those systems. And that's going to be resolved in the courts probably in the next few months. But that's a gray area that needs to be aware of. Acceptable use policies are actually sort of the same point. There's a lot of things that you can't do in the system. Like, say, port scan somebody, that's probably going to be a violation of somebody's acceptable use policy. Peeing them may also be a violation of acceptable use policy. That's going to be another interesting area that's probably going to get resolved in the courts in the next year or two. You guys may have heard, this was a headline on HNN the other day. Quova, this company out in Silicon Valley, is peeing scanning like the whole net. and people are kind of pissed. Go figure. And so no lawsuits have come out of this yet, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if anyone came out of it. All of the pinging and trace tracking, that's it. And it's, side note here, even though I'm running short on time, a pet peeve of mine, vulnerability scanners like ISS, CyberCop Scanner, fun news, Hackership Club, all do this. They will record a vulnerability if you can trace route to the system. Or if you can ping it in a lot of cases. It shows up as a vulnerability. Right? Well, and that's cool, right? Because those of us who mostly are using them, we look at it and be like, yeah, trace route, whatever, sure, totally. Right? We don't care. But you show this thing out to, say, an auditing department at a big company, and they're going to take this voluminous report that the scanner has put out, and they're going to drop it on the director of IT's desk and say, fix all the holes. Right? And the director of IT's bonus is going to be based on, in part, whether or not they were able to respond to the security requirement that came down from the corporate auditing department. Right? And that sucks, because there's going to be this big percentage that are just not useful checks that they're going to get docked on. But so that's off hours. This is an interesting one, and sort of ties back to the property agreement. Is there an off hours? Somebody said no. It depends on who you're working for, what area that you're working in. But the trend in the new economy is no. The trend in the new economy is definitely that all hours are on hours. Area-specific cons. Research can be a very slow pace for a lot of people. Like I said, your goal may be, okay, we're going to turn out a paper this year. And that may not be enough stimulation to keep some people going. It depends on how self-motivated people are. And the pay is typically low in academia, but you get your summers off, sort of. you get a lot of other benefits, but it's often lower pay. That's less true in the private sector. Operations, if you're the guy whose pagers goes off at 3 a.m. when the IDS does its thing, then guess what? You have to wake up and find out what's going on, and that sucks. Okay? I've been the recipient of pagers at 3 o'clock in the morning. I keep my head nodding around here. It sucks. Okay. And it's often a rotational thing. If you're lucky, you get paid for that time, but only if you're lucky. And if you're really lucky, you get paid for when the pager goes off. But that's very rare. Yeah. That's right. Salaried employees are exempt. You can't unionize. You can't. They're not going to get it. Okay. You need to start on my socialist roots. We're not going to do it. Alright, it's also a thankless task. IT staff no one ever will go up to the IT staff and say, nice job, way to go. We had 99.9% uptime this year, and that's awesome. No one will notice. They only notice when things break. Okay? And some of you already know this. Consulting, tons of travel. The change of scenery was a pro, the tons of travel was a con. I've mentioned a little bit about why that's the case. Even though all the frequent flyer miles may seem like a good deal, it's not, I assure you. Okay. It's very high pressure in a lot of cases. You have billability requirements, you need to be out in customer sites, you need to be doing this stuff, you need to deliver a paper within a certain amount of time, you need to go out and get president, you need to wear a suit. It really sucks. I dressed up today to give my talk. I wore a shirt with a collar. Research is good. Shorts and short ripped jeans and t-shirts and whatever. Development is doesn't have a lot of problems really, except being a group effort. Commercial development is not usually done by one person for a code base. So there's often a very low tolerance in that kind of environment for cowboys. People who want to go off and just go and do this thing and don't want to document their code and don't want to write design documents and go and have peer review, code reviews, architecture reviews, review this, review that. That can be a real signing for some folks who just sit down behind the keyboard and bang it out write a million lines of code in a week. Okay, living with demand. We're running very short on time, 5 minutes, so I'm going to pick up the pace a bit here. Or how to get what you want. Negotiate up front. You have to be willing to walk away from the deal in order to get the deal that you want. It is much, much more difficult to get a raise than it is to get hired at a big raise. Okay? once you're there, they figure you're not probably going to go anywhere. It's easier to stay. You've got your 401k vesting stuff to deal with. It's a big pain in the butt to go anywhere. So the company will figure that they're in a better position than you are, and for the most part, they're right. So negotiate up front, get as much as you can up front, get the stock options up front, too. Some places won't grant stock options after you're already hired, which is sort of bizarre, or at least until you're near the end of your vesting period or something like that. Even if you've gotten a big promotion, sometimes they won't do it, and that can be very convenient. So you want to do that. The last 2 points, be honest and communicate. Sort of go to the earlier one about being nice. Be upfront with your employer. Being upfront with your employer protects you from a lot of nasty things that they can do to you if you lie. Lying is bad. Okay? It's better as, somebody said this on the radio the other day, what Clinton got in trouble for was not having sex with the intern. What Clinton got in trouble for was lying about it. Okay? And that's reasonably true, and the same thing holds true in a lot of these cases. Not every case, and you can ask Randall Schwartz if he's here. Some of you are chuckling with his story. But it helps a lot. And communicate also the same thing. Tell your boss what's going on. If you're going to be out because something came up, then, call them up, do stuff like that. And especially relevant for intellectual property agreements. Doing an interview, don't let them interview you. You're the one with the talent. Okay? If they don't want you, go someplace that does. Okay? There are plenty of companies out there. Okay? This is an employee's market. The employment rate in the U.S. is at near all-time lows, and it's fantastic. And that will change in a few years, I assure you. But for now, go where you want, make sure that you're the one who's doing the interviewing and not the other way around. Okay? You're the one who has the skills. Okay? Ask about the stock option agreements, get the details of the vesting arrangements. There is this wild variation in the vesting plans for stock options. The worst one I've heard, which I'm sure is not the worst without that, is worst for an internet company. 5 years, vesting 20% each year. Okay? The best I've heard is a 3-year plan that vests to you 1/3 at the end of your first year. Typically, you don't get anything until the end of your first year. And then vests the remainder daily for the remaining 2 years. That's cool. Monthly, I'll tell you afterwards. there's a wide variety there. Ask them to explain the non-compete agreements, the non-disclosure agreements, and the intellectual property agreements up front. Okay? It's much harder to get out of it than it is to not sign it in the first place. And expected hours, mostly for IT people, what's your on-call thing, how much vacation time you get, important things that you may not necessarily think of in the interview. Right? When you're leaving, provide written notice. Always, it protects you in a lot of ways as much as it protects your employer. Be prepared to be escorted off the premises the moment you give notice. Okay? Why? Because the man is afraid of you. Okay? And it is policy at a lot of companies for anybody who's in a security-sensitive role to immediately be escorted off the property by armed guards in some cases. Okay? And don't take it personally. Yeah, put that on there. be ready for that. You can expect that's probably going to happen. Okay? At least once. And don't forget that they're afraid of you. Offer to disable your accounts. I actually left one small company that I worked for a while, and I changed all the root passwords before I left because I didn't need that kind of temptation. Okay, so here we are wrapping up, and we're out of time. Why sell out? You should do it for the money. If you're not doing it for the money, you're an idiot. Okay? You're giving up your soul for some period of your life, okay? And you're doing it for the money and the benefits and so forth. If you think that you're going to do it to change the world, you're deluding yourself. Okay? You're never going to change the world by working for the man. No one ever does, and you're no exception. Okay? And if you want to actually get the money, then you need to be careful and not throw it away. Don't do anything stupid. Right? And it's better, by the way, to not do something than it is to think that you're not going to get caught, or that you're going to get away with it. Don't think, unless you're working at a very small company, that you know all of the security managers and all of the security people. Okay? You don't, I assure you. Especially, the larger the company it is, the more true that is. Okay? So So be careful. And if you want more money, be more professional. Work on your communication skills. Work on your writing skills. Be nice to people. That is how you move up the ladder. Getting better at your technical skills does not move you up the ladder. Getting more political connections moves you up the ladder. Being able to make a presentation to senior management moves you up the ladder. Communication skills and writing skills. Work on your spelling, for God's sake. Spelling on the internet is atrocious. This is all the way back to school. Which is another point, actually. Finish school if you can, by any stretch. A lot of people will try to get hired out of colleges. Talented people often try to get hired out of colleges, sometimes high school. I've done this, so I'm guilty as charged. However, I also have as an offer to go with that, tuition reimbursement, encouraging and giving people the time that they need to pursue their degrees, ask for that kind of stuff, because it's extremely important that you finish your degree. Everybody should finish at least one undergraduate degree. It will serve you in good stead for many years, I assure you. If you can do a graduate degree in any field, do it. I have a master's in sociology, and it has served me very, very well in my career as a computer security. So, thanks for coming, and I'm sorry that we ran out of time. So, if you have questions...